Familiar becomes friendly, the familiar becomes, feels right. So I have missed the assembling of ourselves in the way that is familiar in a pretty significant way. And every time I'm gone, I do that. But yet it's still a strengthening of my faith to see God call out people the globe over. And I've seen that again and again. And maybe I'll share a little bit about that towards the end of my remarks here. But I thought I'd give a little bit of a description of where we were. We were in the northeast part of Bangladesh, a new area. It's in a district called Shunamganj in the Upazila called Shalla. And it's a very, very remote area. And a lot of the communities around there don't have electricity. And this area, for whatever reason, had a very powerful parliament member since the Freedom War, since the early 70s. And this man was a corrupt man, but he did get power to this community. But the power was on maybe half of the time. And, you know, it was a real challenge in cooking and very hot and just very uncomfortable. But it was interesting what becomes normal. We were home for a couple of days. Then Tekoa says to his mom, he says, Mom, the power has been on all day. And, you know, so pretty soon what is strange becomes familiar. But nonetheless, when we first started last July, Keith Sensnick and I were to this community. That's when the flood waters was up. How you traveled was by boat. When the waters are down, there's no roads. So there's little sections of what you might call a road, but then it, next thing you know, you're out through the rice fields. So when the waters are down, it actually is more challenging to travel. When the waters are up, it's actually a little easier because you can use boats. They have these little wooden skiffs with a little single-stroke engine in them, and they work pretty well. But in January, February, March, the waters were down, so we actually traveled by motorcycle most of the time. And there's sections you could travel pretty good, and there's other places you just eat dust and get your bones jarred around, you know. So we did a lot of that. But when we were there, Monique went back a few different times to arrange things for us. And they asked him, are you Hindu? Because his name represents Hinduism. Everybody in that country puts you in a box based on your name. So anyway, he said, no, I'm not Hindu, I'm Christian. And he said, and the people he interacted with in that way said, I have never seen a Christian. So there's no Christians in this part of the country. So that was one reason why we were interested in going there. And then Monique, actually, we had to get government approvals, and that started last year. So Monique had to get some invitations from schools to teach English. So he talked to maybe a dozen schools, and there was one school, it's called Shamsunder High School, and it was about 7 kilometers away, and it's a quasi-public-private school, and there's a local operating committee, like a school board, and one of these school board members just made very, very derogatory comments against us, and he'd never met us, and he spread that all around the community. And but for whatever reason, the headmaster was sick and was in Dhaka, so we dealt with the assistant headmaster. And the assistant headmaster was pretty open and friendly. But we ended up, the first 3 weeks plus, we couldn't teach because we didn't have the official approval. We had the official approval at some levels, but not all levels. So we didn't start teaching till the end of January. So anyway, we taught in this school. And this man soon observed us, and his worldview of Christianity was Hollywood, was immodest America, was just a host of those things. And he had no other point of reference for Christians. And when we were there for a while, he came to Monique and he said, I am very sorry. I had no idea that there's Christians like this in America. So anyway, it was a very interesting journey that we were on. The whole community was incredibly friendly and outreach oriented, and Tekoa and I would do the shopping and go to the market, and we walk up through the village and Tokoa, a little blonde-haired boy in the middle of dark people, he would get beat up on pretty good. They'd just run in and pull his hair and pinch his cheeks. And soon we had a routine, and we'd drink tea at various places. In that culture, you drink tea, and everybody would ask you, if you please come and drink tea. So we had maybe four or five places we would stop. Usually we'd try to limit it to one or two, but nonetheless, soon the landlord was another one. Our landlord we rented our house from. These men, again, were willing to rent to us because they doubled the price what it should have been, and we didn't have many options, so we did that for the first year. But again, they had us at a big arm's length, and it wasn't long till we were drinking tea together, and soon they came to Monique, and they said, we had no idea. You know, again, their preconceived ideas of Christianity and what it is and what it's represented. So much of the world sees Christianity as Americans going to Iraq and Afghanistan and dropping bombs, and that's what they see Christianity as. And in the first 6 weeks or so, we had a lot of government challenges. The school in the south, in Charkali, almost got shut down. We already had plans in place for distributing those team members to the other regions, and I spent days and days of my time on the phone with government officials and at all levels, and finally, I have to go to Dhaka, I have to go to Puttakali, and just thankfully for Brother Keith, he was a tremendous blessing to our team, but travel in that country is indescribable. If you haven't been there, it's just very hard. But nonetheless, we came through all of that well, and we are learning how to be a proper non-government organization or NGO in that country. And there's a big learning curve, and I feel like we continue to learn a lot. We taught six teachers, taught in two schools. They were busy, taught 6 days a week. And 180 students met the attendance requirements to receive a certificate. So for the first year, we've always given just a certificate of completion, but this was the first year those certificates of completion came from our NGO. So Wynn was with the other five teachers, so he was the first time teaching in a structured environment. And Elijah had two private classes, and it wasn't until later that I realized private classes are actually harder than teaching in a structured environment in school with other teachers. But he taught one class in Sheila's village. I'm going to talk about Sheila a little bit, but taught one class there. Would you have maybe 10, 12 students? And then he also taught one there at our house. So he was busy as well in teaching. And the landlord's son, the landlord is fairly wealthy, so the son had a chip on his shoulder. And I still remember I was working up on the roof. A lot of times I'd be working up there, and he'd come up and say, he knew very little English, but he said, my father owns this house. And I said, yes, I know. I did the lease with him 6 months ago. And he thought that was really impressive. And he was just obnoxious in his class in the early days. And finally, Elijah had to throw him out of his class, and he did. But it wasn't long. He was back again. And in the end, I kind of liked the boy. I don't know. Was he 10 years old, 12 years old? I don't know how old he was. But he actually, we developed a friendship with him and with both landlords. So anyway, it was, it's like so many other places that you go, relationships are interesting and with people. But so I'll just conclude my remarks with a little bit about the church. Monique and Rita and their baby daughter live there with us. Monique, we come in contact with him a couple of years ago, and a tremendous story there with him and his wife, and how he grew up in a Christian orphanage and saw Christianity and said these people aren't obedient to Jesus' teaching, and researched Hinduism and researched Islam and Buddhism and just read a lot. He came across website, did a lot of research on the internet. He came across the Pilgrim Ministry website, and he reached out to whomever's in charge of that, and that came to Tim. And then Tim put him in touch with Donald, and that was how we first got to know each other. And last year, or the year before, whenever it was, when we lived in Dhaka, he came there and spent just long days just studying the Word and made changes in his life and just lined up with the Word. And his wife, you know, she said, I still remember the other year when we were in Dhaka, she'd sit on the mat there and talking to some of the June and maybe some of the other girls on the team. She said, you know, I have this problem. Every time I go home to my village, all these guys come to my father saying, can I marry your daughter? And of course, she wasn't wearing the jewelry that represented being married. And so she took to a very real way that Peter's teaching of non-adornment and so forth. But nonetheless, so there's a pretty long story with the two of them. But they lived across the apartment there from us, and he's the regional SALT manager there. He also does all the NGO activities for the region. But one of the things that we had not done in the north, where Aman and Azam, those men are the leaders of the two churches there in Joyburhat and Nazipur, is that all the people that have become believers, and I don't know, there's maybe 80 or 90 of them now in those two churches, were always baptized into that church. So we never had anybody that was previously baptized that was a believer, you know, become part of that fellowship of the Church of Jesus Christ of Bangladesh. And so anyway, Donald and Aman came there for a period of time, and then we had a power was off and it was dark, you know, so we had this service up on the rooftop one night where both Monique and Rita gave their personal testimony and basically became a member of the fellowship as part of that church, of the body of believers. And, you know, as we think about church here, there's a whole host of things that are very different there, but it just is. You know, I believe the gospel is simple, and, you know, I'm not saying what we're doing. I have an appreciation for what we do, but it's different there. But nonetheless, they both gave their testimonies, and it was a very emotional time for both of them as they shared their life journey and where God has taken them. And It was a very special time as we participated, the whole team participated in that service. And there was different times that Monique, the reason we went here in the first place is Monique had a couple of contacts there, a man by the name of Joel and a young lady by the name of Sheila that he went to school with years ago. So they had asked him to come to this community. So different times they'd come to the house there, and Monique and I would have Bible study with them. And one time Sheila asked, she had three questions. She said, she's a young single lady, maybe 20, 21 years old. And she said, how does one learn about Jesus' teaching? The second question she had was, how does one live out Jesus' teaching, living in the middle of a Hindu community? And the third question was some other variation of that. But so we went to Matthew 5 and talked about loving your enemies, the fruits of the spirits, and the Sermon on the Mount, and we spent different times with that. And then another time when Tim was there, we spent time together, and we taught from John's teaching there, and Nicodemus and Jesus coming together, and how this has happened. So I remember walking away from that Bible study we had when Tim was there, and I said, what do you think? Is she in the kingdom of God or is she not? And Tim thought about it for a while, and he said, you know, I don't know. Either she's in the kingdom of God or she's very, very close. And I said, that's what I was thinking too. And anyway, another couple of weeks later, then Donald and Aman was there, and Monique was there as well. And we were having another Bible study. There's two young men, Joel also, Gopal, and what's the blue Dokkan guy's name? Shamur. So he, there's three men that are also seeking, and I was in Bible study a couple times with two of them, but anyway, they were in and out of these sessions with Sheila, but the men weren't where Sheila was at all. She was asking questions, and I thought she was, you know, God was calling her in a very significant way. The other men weren't quite at the same place, and anyway, I said to Monique, I said, I wish we could have a Bible study just with her. And so we did. And you know, I was a little bit kind of moderating those events because I was the constant that was always there, and there's different people in and out. And so we talked about different things. But in the end, Monique and Aman and Sheila were doing just a lot of talking in rapid-fire Bangla. But in the end, she said that Aman asked her, would you like to accept Jesus in your heart? And she said, yes. And we kneeled down and we prayed there. So we were talking about when should she be baptized. And I don't know if it was the next day, a couple days later, we had a baptismal service on the roof for this young sister. And, you know, it was, again, the power's off. We were up on the roof. It was dark. And she was baptized. Monique and Amon and Donald, you know, all had parts in the ceremony. But after she was baptized, she stood and this sister just cried. She just wept for a long time. Me being a man, I felt a little uncomfortable. But at the same time, later I was talking to Monique about it, and she said, you know, he said there were tears of joy. And then we had another, I don't know, almost a month maybe with her after her service, after her baptismal there. And so it was different times. One time she'd come over. She'd stay at Monique and Rita's house different times, but she'd come over to our side of the apartment and ask her, how's it going in your community? And we have a SALT group. She's a SALT member, a member of a savings group right in her community. So Monique is in and out of there a lot. But that whole village is like, what happened to you? And I couldn't help but think of, you know, she was like, oh, how do I tell people? And I said, you know what? Just the way Matthew 5 teaches, your life will show, and soon people will start questioning. And her father is supportive of her. I don't know if supportive is the right word, but her father is more like, you know, if you wish to choose this, that is okay. So then we got into all these discussions, all these religious ceremonies and pujas and festivals they have. Should she go or not? And so we talked about that. And should she give money or not? Because it's a money racket, you know. And anyway, so there was a lot of good discussions. But I came away just realizing that, you know, God's not limited by any of that. God's going to give her the power and the strength she needs to be faithful in her new faith. And you know, there is about a week before we left then, there's a young man by the name of Min Hazol. He has been working in the SALT program for 2.5 years in Joy Perhat. And we were looking, our vision from the beginning was to move experienced people to new regions, to start a new outreach, if you will. And in the early days, I was thinking SALT only. But then as time went on, we were, you know, this is really the church needs to decide this. So we backed away from SALT, and I thought it wasn't going to happen. And then when Amon was there, we talked about it, and they said, yeah, the time is right for them to come. So Min Hazol, Muslim background man, and his wife, Jadeen, moved there about a week before we left. So now with Min Hazol and Jadeen and Monique and Rita and Sheila, there's 5 believers that are there, that are the little candle of the New Testament church is flaming in that community. And it had, I don't know if it ever happened before. Where God's going to take that, only God knows. But, you know, it... tremendous blessing, and it makes the work worthwhile when you see God calling people. And I think of some other places we've been teaching, and people have been seeking and asking, and we ask why. I was expecting a long journey, you know, this might be 3, 4, 5 years, and here there's now 5 believers in this community. And one thing that stands out is we have somebody to refer them to. And if there's an anchor in the community, and again, I don't think God's limited by places where there's seekers and there's no biblical Christian there. I think God can overcome that as well. But you just ponder where it all goes and what it all means. I don't know. You know, I've thought too about our family and should we go back again? Those are the questions that we ponder and ask. And I don't know. There's a cost to go, just like there's a cost to stay. And we think of our children missing Bible school and our school with things at school, and you think of the creature comforts that we get so used to, and you know, you come back to a community of believers and you say, you know what, it's been months, I don't know what's going on in people's lives anymore, and you have to choose to reinvest. And that's what I want to do, is that's what my family wants to do, is reinvest in our local body here and just love you and appreciate you and have the opportunity to worship together again. And I don't know where God calls people, but we want to be faithful. So thank you very much for your prayers. And those of you who messaged and emailed, that was very, very much appreciated. God bless you.